Now's the time for the leader to qualify. As I said, my name is Bob. I'm a compulsive overeater. I brought some pictures. These are ones I could find, so please don't judge me by the fact that I'm trying to impress anybody, but that's not the reason. It shows me at my lowest weight as an adult, and I mean as an adult meaning, 35 and over. To me, that's an adult. But anyway, my lowest weight of 195 pounds and my biggest weight of 308 pounds. To get all the numbers out of the way, currently I was as low as 235. I'm struggling now. I'm probably 238, 239. And I'm aware of it. I'm conscious and aware of it and trying to do something about it, which is the way I love this. I'm 5 years in the program, just so everybody understands. But anyways, and I was in the radio business, so that's why some of these pictures look this way. Please understand that. First of all, I had a normal childhood up until I was 21 months old. That's when I fell out of a second-story window onto a cement driveway and broke every bone in my left side, my leg, my brain concussion, skull fracture. So I spent my second birthday in the hospital. And my belief in the higher power came from that, because at the hospital they told my parents that an angel must have caught me. Otherwise I'd be dead. Excuse me for getting emotional. Anyway, that started a period of about 10 years of every other year, my mother getting a call that her son was in the hospital in the emergency room from a series of broken arms, broken legs, brain concussions, skull fractures, car accidents. I was a mess as a kid. So in order to keep me close to home, my mother would bake cakes, would make cookies, would bake pies, would do ice cream, would do anything to lure me to stay around the house. And I ate everything except for coconut cream pie and rhubarb. I wouldn't eat those two. I only ate the ice cream. But at a very early age, I became addicted to recreational sugar. I've heard all the stories in this room about, taking a bite out of one ear of the Easter Bunny when I was a kid, when I was 30, when I was 40, when I was 50, when I was 60, and eating, both ears, then the legs, and by the time my daughter would get her Easter Bunny in the morning, there would be an eye left. I was fortunate enough at the age of 40 to have a child, and so I experienced, Halloween with a kid, and she would go out and get the big, big, giant bag of candy and bring it home and spread it all out. And she would look at it and put it back in her room. And then I would compulsively go over to that room for the next week and eat every single thing in that room. Back to what it was like as a kid. So anyways, as a kid I was very active, but I was active constantly eating. I was constantly a fat child. I was, I've heard the stories in this room about the Husky department. We had the seamstress down the street that would let out my pants and the thighs and the ass. It was a consistent story. And the ropes in gym class, seriously, I would like to burn every one of them down. But when I got into junior high and high school, I got into sports. I played football. I was very active. I was active to maintain my weight. That's really what it was. I went to college and I stopped working out. I started drinking heavily. I went to a hometown college in Wisconsin where drinking was the legal age, was 18. I had a fake ID when I was 15, so I went to the exact bar, same bars, from 15 to 21, 6 years straight. They changed the drinking age in the middle to 21, and when I actually celebrated my 21st birthday, the owner of the bar went, "What's all the commotion?" And I started compulsively eating more and more. Living at home in a hometown college, all my friends in school, would eat a can of corn because they didn't have any money, so they could get two beers at the bar. I'd go home and eat a full meal, then go out with them afterwards, get a pizza, We know the drill. It's in a lot of us in this room. And I was a major compulsive eater. Moved to California. I worked in the radio business. I was successful in my career. But now, so I'll move forward to when I moved to California. I was successful in my career. I was in my late 20s. I started working out, playing tennis and racquetball, and worked out 7 days a week. But I did it to maintain my weight. And that's the insanity. I mean, I literally worked out 30 hours a week of racquetball, tennis, working out, but to maintain my weight. When I hit 45, between two bad knees, two bad hips, I stopped working out. And from 45, by the way, I didn't come into this program until I was 66. So if there's one thing I regret more than anything in the world, it's the fact that I didn't find this program when I was 36 or 46. But I also know me and what's inside of me, and I would have resisted and fought everything in this room. I've stole food, hid food from my family for years. I mean, I've never, ever, ever went a day without some recreational sugar. Not an hour, not a day. I'll give you a quick story, a couple of quick stories, which I think will explain my compulsion. I was addicted to Chuckles. Does anybody know what Chuckles are? If you're a Seinfeld fan, you know what they are. They're these five sugary jelly candies. And every time I would go to New York, I would, because I go to New York on business all the time, I'd load up my bag with Chuckles. I'd stop at every one of the little stands on the corner and buy all kinds of Chuckles. So a guy that worked for me knew that I was addicted to Chuckles. He bought 10 packages of Chuckles, brought them back, spread them out all over my desk. He came back like a half hour later to see the joke. They were all gone. And he went, where did you put them? I said, no, I ate them. He goes, you ate them? That's 50 pieces. You know, you can't eat again. I ate in the morning. I ate midday. I ate at lunch. I ate in the afternoon. And everything had to be topped off with a recreational sugar. Everything. Every meal, if I was happy, I ate. If I was sad, I ate. If I was nervous, I ate. I had to reward myself constantly, and it was always sugar. I had another employee that once said to me, he goes, man, you must eat a lot at night. Because, by the way, throughout this entire period of my late 20s to, you know, till 66, I was constantly on a diet. I was on pregnant women's urine. I was on Fin. I was on the drinks, the UCLA drink shake program. I was on, I mean, you name it, Diet Center, Weight Watchers, any pill that went on television that was looking for the miracle, I bought it. You know, every contraption, Tony Little. I must own three or four things that Tony Little. I got the inverted Chuck Norris, you know, the body thing that I was going to. I was constantly looking for the miracle. I was constantly looking for the easy way out because I didn't want to do the hard way out. Doctors begged me to lose weight. You know, friends of mine said to me, well, you want to see your daughter grow up, you want to do this, you want to do that. It didn't matter. My compulsion was my compulsion. What I've learned in this program is, I'll give you another quick story. Years ago, I worked in television, and I went to lunch with my boss, who was, you know, 5'10", 160, 150 pounds. And he had a stressful morning, and he goes, you know what, I'm going to still want to get, let's go. He says, I want to go somewhere, I want to get a cheeseburger, french fries, and a milkshake, a malt. I said, perfect. So we go, he has like three bites of the cheeseburger, five french fries, and maybe two sips of the malt. And he goes, I'm done, I'm full. And I literally, and I've heard it in these rooms where people are, you forget what the lunch happened. I was like, wait a minute. how can you leave that sit there? That's insane. You don't eat it? You have no desire to eat it? I couldn't, my mind couldn't make that connection. And that's what I've learned in this program, that anytime my mind makes a decision about food on its own, it's the wrong decision. I had no idea what quality or quantity control was, or quality control either. You know, if it was cheap, you know, 99-cent stores basically built half their stores off of me buying their candy. Because I thought if it's in bulk, it's even better. You know, and again, hiding food in my room at home from my family. I'll give you another great story, and I know I'm going all over the place, but these pop into my head and they're too good to be true. I've been in the program 5 years. I've been abstinent of recreational sugar for 5 years. We had a house sitter a couple of weeks ago. We went to a dog sitter, house sitter. We went to a wedding, so this woman stayed at our house. My wife is addicted to these Trader Joe's, little tiny, they're like Oreo, or you know, Oreo cookies, right? So she bought a bag for the house sitter, the dog sitter. So my daughter and her husband came over Sunday night before we got home, and they went to get some of these Oreo cookies, and they were almost all gone. And they're like, "Who ate them?" And her husband said, "Well, did Bob eat them?" She goes, No, they're not sugar-free," which I'll get into that whole sham that I was addicted to. But for the first time in my life, I've been able to go to the store, because my wife entertains and has people. They have normal people. You know, I'm surrounded by normal people, which sucks. And I have friends, our best friends, that we travel with on vacations and go everywhere. They're sugarholics. So everywhere we go, there are tons of desserts, tons of, you know, sugar all the time. And it's so blessed for me that I know now, you know, again, 66 years of sucking it all up, I know that it's not my food, so I don't eat it. 6 months into this program, my wife sent me to the bakery to buy a bunch of, you know, chocolate brownies and some other stuff. We were having an event at our house. And I went to the bakery, and it was sitting next to me, and I looked at it, and I went, "It's amazing. I know this is not for me." You know, at 63, half of that would have been eaten. You know, so anyway, I totally lost my train of thought. But so for once in my life, I wasn't the one who ate all the food. I wasn't the one that if a gallon of ice cream came into the house, it was gone the next day, and they knew it was me, and I had to lie to them and say, no, I had one spoonful, you know. I heard this 2 weeks ago, but somebody said, I forget who it was, but they said, someone took a cookie out of a bag and ate the cookie and then put the bag back. That's not me. If I did see a bag of cookies, and I ate one, I wasn't satisfied till I ate the whole bag. And that led on to, which I've heard in this room, which has been so blessed, that people who say they have one bite of something, and then everybody else goes on their normal life, but that drives them to the insanity that they have to eat for the rest of the night if they go out to dinner or whatever it is. I had all those compulsions. I didn't know what being full was. I had no idea what being full was. I could eat 3 meals in a row. And all I know is I woke up thousands of mornings where I said, "This is it. I can't take it anymore. I'm going on a diet today." And sometimes it would last till noon. Sometimes it would last till 2. The thinnest picture I am at 195 pounds was Diet Center. And Diet Center guilted you into weighing every 3 days. So, and they had this list of foods you could eat, and you had to go every 3 days. So it was my ego that got me there. And I'll never, ever forget this. I went to Macy's or whatever it was in Beverly Hills. I forget the name of this. Bloomingdale's, one of them. And I was trying on pants. And I put on a size 34 pant. And I could feel my hip bones. Do you know what my reaction was? I left the store and ate immediately. It scared the living hell out of me. I wasn't mentally prepared to deal with that. I've been fat my whole life, and I wasn't ready to deal with a size 34 pant. When I worked at ABC Television, this was a big part of my career that I overcame because of I fought to overcome in my own mind my inability to be successful. Was when I worked at ABC Television, they told me, if you want to succeed in this business, you're a 44 long. You know, and that's a 44 long, by the way, with a 32 waist. You know, and that was what kept me going, because that was the image in my mind. I used to say to people, I could run Paramount if I was 6'2" and weighed 175 pounds. I had that much of insecurity about my weight, yet I was never willing to do one thing about it. I embarrassed my family. I mean, when I was 300 pounds and going to events with my daughter at her school, it was embarrassing. No ifs, ands, or buts. But I didn't care. As long as I ate, I didn't care. As long as I got my food, that's all I cared about. How did I get here? How am I doing on time, Carol? Got 20 minutes? Okay. How did I get here? And how did it change? My sponsor's in the room today. I went to a party. One of my employees who has these phenomenal parties, one's coming up in a couple of weeks, and his wife is a foodie, and they're normal, by the way. These are normal people, which should all be shot. They should be taken out. So, you know, and they have a dessert table, like two of those tables put together with 20 or 30 types of desserts. So I would go, and they always serve three or four types of meats and pasta and salads and everything else. And then it's the desserts. So now I've eaten, you know, three plates. And again, I never knew what one plate was. Now, by the way, I've had nutritionists, the palm of the hand bullshit, pardon my English, but, you know, you're going to eat the palm of your hand, three fingers is this. And I heard in these rooms that somebody overdosed on carrots. If I ever overindulge on carrots, God forgive it. I mean, that's crazy. But anyway, so I go to this party. I've probably eaten two or three plates of all the food, and I'm lined up at the dessert tray. And my sponsor and his son-in-law are standing in front of me. And they're not tiny people. And they get some fresh fruit in a cup. And I look at them and I go, you're not going to have dessert? And they said, no, I haven't had a sugary dessert in 10 years. I said, what? Because that's something I could relate to. If somebody pinpointed that, I could relate to that. So I started talking to him. They told me about OA. He's in OA. The following Saturday, my daughter brought me to my first meeting at the kitchen sink. And I've been here for 5 years, and it saved my life. It changed my entire life. I now know what quantity of food is. I now know what smart food choices are. I'm not going to lie to you. Do I make them every single day, 7 days a week? No, I don't. But I'm aware of when I don't. And I'm aware of what motivates me to eat, what doesn't motivate me to eat, and what I have to do to change it. For the people that are new here, my sponsor suggested three things to me. Pick an abstinence that you can live with. That was number one. Number two, report your food to me every single day, all your meals, whatever you eat. And God bless him, because he didn't judge me. Because for the first 4 years, maybe 4.5 years of this program, well, the first 2.5 years of this program, here's what I thought. Give up recreational sugar. That's perfect. I'm abstinent. That means I can eat anything and everything I want all day long. So I learned that lesson. And then I'll get to this quickly about the addicted to, because my mind was, it's sugar-free chocolate. I can eat sugar-free chocolate. And sometimes I would eat too much of it, and I would report it to him, and he'd say, "You have to make the decision." And I would stop it for a while, then I'd pick it up again. Well, about 4 months ago, I heard the woman in here speak about being eating too many Reese's peanut butter cup sugar-free chocolates. And the message, you know, the lightning bolt sunk in and said, "You've got to stop it." So I stopped. I don't eat sugar-free chocolates anymore. I gave it up. This is a program of evolution. It evolves every single day. And by coming to these rooms for 5 years and listening to the podcast and listening to Tuesday night, what I've learned is my problems are not unique. My problems are more real than imagined. And there is a way for me to survive and not be addicted to food. Do I still love food? Absolutely. But I'm not addicted to it. I'm certainly not addicted to recreational sugar anymore. That I'm not addicted to. I haven't had it in 5 years. And believe me, being at 66 to enter this program and walking through Walgreens or anything else where it's literally, you know, grabbing your ear and pulling you, it's great because now I can say, this isn't my food. I don't need it. I don't have to have it. I don't want it. And that's something I was never, ever... My family said to me, "You'll never be able to give up sugar. You can't give up desserts. How could you possibly give up desserts?" And again, God was generous to me to let me live when I should have died long, long time ago. But he was way too generous with me, letting me eat everything under the sun after that. And this program has saved my life. And hopefully I'll be around for another 10 years because of it. Because I wouldn't have been. I wouldn't have been if I would have stayed the way I was. Do I go to 9:15? All right. Pardon?
Use them wisely.
Use them wisely. Use them wisely. I live in step 1, 2, and 3. That's where I live. Every single day. Give you a great story about God and my program. I was in New York a couple of months ago on a business trip. Rushing to the airport, didn't eat breakfast. Again, you know, that self-satisfaction. Oh my God, I didn't eat breakfast. I've got 3 meals a day and 2 snacks. By the way, the 2 optional snacks, they've never been an option for me. Never. You know, someday hopefully I'll get to the program where the optional snacks are options, but they're not right now. So I didn't get my breakfast. So I'm thinking, holy Christ, I'm down a meal. That's that brain working. I'm down a meal. So I'm running through the airport, and I stop at one of these, you know, Farm Fresh or Health Fresh, whatever the hell it is, and I literally get a turkey and cheese and tomato sandwich on ciabatta bread or whatever the hell it is, but things like this. It's like 1.5 pounds. So I'm like, well, this will be my breakfast and my lunch, probably and my snack. So I get on the plane, and this is how God works. So I get on the plane. We take off. It's now time for me to eat. I open up the sandwich and half of it falls on the ground. And I said, if that isn't a message from God, what is? Eat half of it and shut up. That's basically what it was saying. I can now go to for 25 years I was told, okay, for 25 years I was told, read packages. You know, read the labels of stuff. Now I actually do that. You know, it's frightening. Anyway. This is the time for questions only. There's no sharing at this meeting. If you need to share, please do so with one of us after the meeting. Also, please remember that the opinions of the leader are my own and not those of Overeaters Anonymous as a whole. When asking questions, you need not identify yourself. Please remember, if you ask a question, your voice may be audible on the OA podcast. All right. Yes?
What do you do when you feel like eating a food that you're not supposed to eat to avoid eating it and not just go and eat it?
Right. So I do one of two things. Pardon? Thank you. What do I do when I'm supposed to, or when I want to eat something and I know I'm not supposed to? First thing I do is I stop and ask myself, which is miraculous for me. Secondly, by the way, I forgot to tell you something. About 2.5 years ago, my doctor suggested I get this MyFitnessPal. It's an app that you log in, so I do a calorie count every day of my food. So then I make a decision. Now, if it's a recreational sugar, I don't eat it. But if it's like pizza, then I decide, and I'll never forget a small woman here a couple of years ago. I actually was at the kitchen sink over on Robertson when she said, and she was tiny. She said, you know, I love pizza. I order a pizza. I ate the whole pizza. Then I ate 3/4. Then I ate half. You know, she goes, I finally got it down to 2.5 slices, and I'm working on getting it down to 2 slices. So I make those kind of judgments in my mind. I have to realize, 2 years ago, if you'd asked me that question, I would have told you, I eat it, and then I worry about it later. You know, I think about it. Do I pray over everything? Sometimes I do. I should do more of that. But so far, this has worked, because the one thing this program has given me is it's unlocked my mind to ask the question. That never happened before. And that's what I get to do now. Yes?
Thank you so much.
How do I define powerlessness? Powerlessness for me is I get urges. I still get urges. And again, I've oversatisfied my appetite for a long while. I'm 71 years old, so for 66 years I never gave up anything, you know, unless it was coconut. You know, I didn't like coconut. But by the way, I would eat an alms, whatever one of them, almond joy. I probably would eat that. So you know, the chocolate would camouflage it. But I obsess about certain things. And I was obsessing for a while about frozen yogurt. And I swear to God, and again, I know that God exists, because I pulled into the frozen yogurt parking lot. And I knew I shouldn't get it. I knew I didn't need it. But I was obsessing about it. And I pulled into the parking lot, and there were no parking spaces. And I said, there it is. There's the message, as clear as it can be. Go home. You don't need to. So when I obsess about something or compulsion, I just try to talk my mind out of it. That's the only thing. I hope that answered your question. But
well, in terms of turning over, you know, behavior powerless,
right. So when I'm powerless, that's when I go back and I say, God, grant me the serenity to accept. I mean, I just repeat that. I have to, you know, because I can't. If I allow, and I've heard this for 5 years in these rooms from everybody, if I allow my mind to make a decision, it's the wrong decision. I can't make an intelligent decision about food. I can run businesses. I can do everything under the sun. Do not ask me to make an intelligent decision about food. You know, that doesn't exist. So, yes, that's what I do. Yes?
Can you talk a little bit about how you use the literature?
I don't read as much as I should. I read a couple of passages a day about spiritual awakening. I live in 1, 2, and 3. I mean, I've done all 12 steps. You know, I did an inventory with my sponsor, which, you know, was difficult for me, and it was interesting. He asked me to write a letter to God of how I saw God and how God saw me. And his response was, "Phew, boy, you got one mean God." So, I mean, I need to spend more time with the literature. I live by the 12 steps. You know, I read this a lot, but I don't read a lot of outside literature. I mean, you know, OA literature, and I should spend more time with the big book. When I first started, I went to some men's big book studies, and they scared the hell out of me, because, you know, these guys are opening up, and I'm new, and I'm going, holy Christ, you know. But, again, my studying is coming to these meetings, listening to the podcasts, and you know, doing the phone meetings. That's my studying. Because I hear people talk about the same problems that I have, whether it's anorexia, bulimia, or just compulsive overeating, you know. So I hope that answers your question. Yes?
Thank you. You may have just announced that you can't speak much to it, but could you talk about your experience with 6 and 7 character defects and asking God to remove them?
Yeah, I've gone through that, and I think I've improved. Yeah, I'm sorry. Step 6 and 7, character defects and asking God to remove them. I've made amends to people that I've wronged. I made amends to my family, which I really wronged by, you know, taking food, hiding food, stealing food, eating their food. I've asked God to remove jealousy, and I've asked God to remove... He'll never remove the gossip, unfortunately. I wish that could happen, but it isn't going to happen. No, but I'm trying to be facetious. You know, so I've asked those things, and I think I'm a better person today than I was when I came into the program. That's the only way I can address it. Yes?
Thank you. Great message. Can you tell me, for you, how do you know you're doing God's will opposed to your own will?
How do I know if I'm doing God's will opposed to my own will? If I'm doing something right, it's probably God's will. No. I don't know if I can, honestly, I'm being very honest. I don't know if I can differentiate that. I mean, I know there's a higher power. I call it God. I know that I believe in God. I think I've changed as a person. People have said to me, well, you've mellowed in the last few years. I think that's the best way I can interpret that. I think I've changed from being too egotistical and too jealous, and I believe that's the case. Yes?
Thank you. You said when you came in, you had a mean God?
Well, no. During my program, my sponsor told me to write a letter to God describing God, my view of God, and have God write a letter to me, which I wrote. Maybe God wrote it, but anyways, describing me. And he said, wow, you've got a mean God. And that's the insecurities I have about myself. I'm still fighting those insecurities. My weight has been a battle in my mind for my entire adult life. I mean, I couldn't wear skinny jeans. I didn't wear jeans till I was 50-some years old. I mean, I couldn't do... I wanted to be hip. You know, I was in a business which was show busy, you know, so I wanted to dress. And when guys would come in or my bosses would wear, you know, skinny suits or something like that, I mean, I realized, man, oh, man, you know, you saw the pictures. I can't camouflage this. And it made me very, very insecure. So I think that's what came out in my letter from God.
So has that changed at all? Or?
It's starting to. Okay. It's starting to. I feel better about myself today. And I feel better about myself when I go into I can shop at a regular store. That's something I feel definitely better. I can go to the Gap and buy clothes. Mm-hmm. I've never been able to go. In my adult life, I was never able. Well, maybe when I was 195, you know, I could have gone to the Gap. But for the rest of my life, I wasn't. So, yes. Yes?
You mentioned that you have a regret that you can't go back here. So, when you started uncovering, if you started uncovering your stepwork, how do you not get buried, like, in regret? You know, from that.
Right. I'm very lucky. I'm a very positive person. I wake up every single day and I think it's a great day. I mean, I've never woken up in a bad mood in my life. Woke up drunk, but I've never woke up in a bad mood in my life. And I woke up with a food hangover numerous times. So what I regret, and I say that I regret I didn't come to this program at 36 or 46, I can also tell you, knowing me, I would have walked right out the door. I would have listened to people and I would have said, they're all nuts. You know, I'm not going to do that. They're crazy. I was looking for a miracle. Everything I've come to this room, And you're a newcomer, so you got to understand. 5 years of coming to these meetings, listening to the podcast, here's what I've learned. There are no miracles. I look for the miracle. I paid lots of money for the miracle. There are no miracles. There's hard work and dedication and enacting a program that makes sense for you. And that's what I was able to get. And I was, and when they say that you have to be at that low, low end to find this, the night at that party, when he didn't eat the dessert, I was at that point. I was looking for, what the hell? How do you do that? And when I came to that first meeting, besides Jack, everybody in... That's a little humor. But anyways. Everybody embraced me, hugged me, and welcomed me. And I felt like I was home the first day I walked in here. And that's why I've never stopped coming. Yes?
You had a discussion with us prior to the program... Relationship with God after the program.
Right. Prior to the program, my relationship with God, and my relationship with God after the program. I always believed in God. And I always used God whenever I was in a dire, when I was going in for an operation or something like that. Please, you know, let me live God. Now that I'm in the program, I use God in a different way. I use the higher power God to help me make decisions that are intelligent for me, to help guide me through this process of life, and to help me keep me from being an egotistical ass, which I'm capable of being, you know, and to check myself. That's how I use God. And I mean, I'm lucky that I have that relationship. But I've always believed, I always was a firm believer in God. Yes.
Thank you so much. Can you talk a little bit about how you connect with God? If you have a spiritual practice, or is it through the people and the meetings?
Right. How do I connect with God? Is it a spiritual practice? I don't get on my knees and pray. I probably should. I don't. I talk to God. I'll give you a quick story. My Pilates instructor. Let's put that out again. My Pilates instructor was going to Machu Picchu, whatever is in Peru, what is it? Machu Picchu. And I said, you're not going to do ayahuasca. She goes, yes, I want that experience of finding God. I go, God, I wake up every morning and I see God. I mean, my God. You look around. God is here. He's present. I have a 2.5-foot barn owl that showed up in my backyard yesterday. That's God to me. I mean, the thing was looking at me for like 2 hours. I was like, where did that come from? You know, so I don't have a problem connecting with God. I've never had a problem connecting with God. Do I pray? Do I go to church? No. Should I? Yes, I probably should. But do I believe in God? Absolutely. And do I feel I touch God every day? Yes, in some way or another. Yes?
Our lecture says that fear is a corrosive threat that threatens our life, which is the egotistical thing.
How has having worked the program affected my fears? I wouldn't say I'm fearless, but I'm saying I'm in check. I think that having worked this program and seeing the healing that's happened in this program and AA, I loved the kitchen sink at Robertson. I loved it because of the log cabin, and I've had friends that have been in AA for 40 years, so I know the healing that comes out of that room. I know since I've been in this program, I can't be ego-driven. I've had to change. I hope that answers your question, but I think I've reduced my ego down to being a regular person because I realized what was pushing me was insecurity and ego, and I don't have to be insecure or have a big ego anymore. I hope that answers your question. Yes.
What do you think, do you remember a moment in your head when you were able to switch from eating too much to eating normal amount of eating and now to eating consistent with the weight of the absence? And so what was your process in that?
Well, again, as I said, what was my process to eating a normal amount versus a large amount? My process is when I came into the program, again, his suggestion to me was find an abstinence you can live with. Let's start with recreational sugar because you are addicted to that. I said, perfect, I'll do that. And then I was lucky I gave it up immediately. I was shocked that I could, my family was more than surprised that I was able to do it. So I started eating bigger portions of things. So, but as I came to meetings and listened to people and listened to the podcast and read some of the literature at that point, I realized, what is this game you're playing with yourself? I mean, I answered my own question. And slowly but surely, it started to get down. And again, I'm not going to tell you that I eat this much every day. I'll never forget, there was a guy, a speaker a year ago or so, who talked about his big salad, that he took his salad to work every day, and it was a giant salad, and he had to have that giant salad. There are times I feel like that with a meal. I've got to have that big meal. I also question myself when I'm doing that. What is motivating me to do that? Why am I doing that? I asked that question. I never asked that question before in my life. Thank you.